Hi, everyone, and welcome to Nom Watch Review, part of the Nom Talk Network. On this show, we review the latest film drop or a throwback celebrating a milestone while eating and drinking our favorite movie snacks and drinks. We are supposed to be doing this in third person. Jennifer, myself, don't forget that Nom Watch has merch. You can find Nom Watch's shop in the About section on Nom Watch's Twitch, or get the link by typing bang or exclamation point merch in the chat. Note that subscribers to Nom Watch's Twitch channel get a discount. Jennifer is your host, Jennifer. And right now, Jennifer is enjoying a frozen Coke that stayed frozen for about 42 seconds from the time it was handed to Jennifer. And because Jennifer doesn't eat marshmallows, Jennifer's eating cheddar puffs. They stay puffed also. And may Jennifer introduce Jennifer's guest for the day? I would like to introduce, Jennifer would introduce Derek, Julie, and Tony. Tony, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
I just realized that my camera was half obstructed.
What you're drinking.
But better late than never. Hi, everybody. I'm the Toni Sanchez. And Toni already has a terrible habit of talking about herself in the third person. So this is going to be way more organic than I would like. As for Toni Snacks, Toni is, listen, ever since Toni got on TikTok, Toni has realized that she's never had a unique experience. And Toni is a prototypical girl where Toni has water. Toni has a nutritional tea, and then for funsies, a third beverage, which is my Gatorade. I'm actually feeling a little under weather right now, so all of this hydration is for my actual health. But also, this is how I cruise around, or how Toni cruises around on a standard day. So hydration, nutrition, and then funsies. So, yeah.
Hydration is very important. Charlie is also under the weather. Jennifer's gotten cat sneezes in her hair and her face today, so I understand. Derek, how are you this evening, and what are you snacking on?
Yeah, Derek is doing well. Derek's excited to be back on the show. Derek is currently snacking on some popcorn in his little customized
Oh, how cute.
custom popcorn bucket made specifically for this show as a gift. And then I am
Nice.
drinking, I believe this is a highball, but not the highball you're thinking of. So Derek will let you ponder that one. And Derek would also like to let everybody know that Bustin does make him feel good. So.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Derek. Julie, welcome tonight. Julie, what are you snacking on and drinking tonight?
Julie is drinking a secret menu item from Starbucks that I discovered. This is actually the Ghostbusters drink. So, if anybody's wondering, it is a vanilla bean frappuccino with one pump of strawberry puree and cookies. It's kind of melting already, but cookies and cream topping on the top. It's supposed to look like the Ghostbusters logo. My barista didn't exactly swirl it like you're supposed to, but I don't think they knew what was going on because it came out around Halloween time. So, but you can still order it because obviously Ghostbusters is out right now. Come on. And then I'm having a stromboli because that seemed like a New York sort of thing to have. Or sorry, Julie is having a stromboli. And Julie is also having some Cheetos because that is Slimer's favorite snack, or one of his favorite snacks. So, yeah.
Before we started talking about this fabulous movie on the show, we were talking about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire, the second of the new Ghostbusters movie. Derek, popcorn running out of popcorn buckets, did you give the movie?
sorry, I was eating popcorn. I gave this
Oh.
movie I gave this movie 2 stars. I know it's probably the lowest one on here. I have been a longtime Ghostbusters fan. It's one of my favorite movies as a kid. I am all for unabashed nostalgia, especially when it's done right. And I think Afterlife has a much better take on kind of combining the two of bringing back the old for nostalgia's sake while also handing off everything to a future generation. But this one, I felt very much like you've got this relay race of the past and the present, and neither one wants to let go of the baton and like give it to the future. And that really bogged it down. This was one of the first times I felt a Ghostbusters film was actually extremely overstuffed. And the old characters actually hurt the film rather than enhance it. And this plethora of new characters, when we just barely got introduced to new characters 2 or 3 years ago that we're still trying to remember, it all just didn't come together in the way that I really wanted to. So fortunately, I had to give this a pretty low marks of 2 stars. It does get that extra star specifically for James Acaster because he's probably one of my favorite comedians of all time. And he showed up and I was like, well, this instantly got better. So,
okay, that's fair. Tony, how about for you?
Yeah, I gave it 3.5 for very many of the reasons that Derek just listed. Ghostbusters is one of my favorite movies of all time. Ghostbusters 2 actually is my favorite of the entire franchise, so that can kind of give you an idea of how forgiving I am to this franchise and how much that the sillier the better, the more extreme, the more ridiculous. I think
it's
that's
Vigo.
Awesome. Yeah. Absolutely. That movie is both funnier and creepier to me somehow than the yes. first. And the first is just comedic gold. I mean, that's lightning in a bottle. You're never going to recapture that again. So I'm an incredibly lenient Ghostbusters viewer. But I watched Frozen Empire and you couldn't help but just see, yeah, it's overstuffed. The seams are coming apart. They hold together, I think, by the end. But man, they are strained. But I have fun with the franchise. I definitely have seen other parts of the Ghostbusters franchise that I definitely disliked more. So I think that also kind of played into why this is a very middle of the road rating for me. I had fun. I wouldn't mind going back to see it in the theater again, even though I'm pretty sure that the theater is what got me sick and why I have the sniffles now. And I kind of rate, I'm not the moviegoer that I used to be. The pandemic broke me of that habit. I used to go like at least once every week or every 2 weeks. And now it's like once every few months. So I still thought it was a blast. I still think everybody should at least, you know, see it, you know, decide for themselves how they feel about it. But for the most part, I think that there's enough here to entertain people and definitely keep me entertained. I'd buy it from my DVD collection.
Absolutely. All right. And Julie, what was your rating for this one?
Mine was also 3.5 for, yes, much of the same reasons. I was a pretty good big Ghostbusters fan, but I did discover it a little bit later, I think, than everybody else. But then I was like really into it. I agree. Well, I felt like the first one, I think like Derek was saying, the first one of this newer franchise, the newer movies, was a lot better at just capturing kind of the fun and the nostalgia and introducing some new characters. And this one, the pacing was kind of weird and, I don't know. I actually kind of disagree that I think the old Ghostbusters were fun to have in there. I don't think it weighed it down. That's my thoughts. But I agree with a lot of your same reasoning to both Derek and Tony. So, yeah.
Awesome. I gave it 3.5. I agree with all of you. You know, I saw the very first Ghostbusters 1984 10 times in the theater. I think my dad was just like, all right, it'll shut her up. Let's go. It was, you know, the summer my baby sister was born, it kept me out of my mom's hair. And they were like, let's just take her to the movies. So I saw the movie over and over and over again. And when Afterlife came out, I absolutely loved it. And then this one came out and I know my partner was like, he was scared to see it. He's like, oh God, they're going to ruin it with the second one. And I don't think they ruined it. It was fun. I enjoyed it. I am going to go see it again in the theaters because I have A-list and I might as well use it. And I don't know. The pacing was off. I could have done without Melody and I have reasons and we'll talk about her later. And then, yeah, it just didn't quite get to the level of Afterlife for me, but it wasn't like the worst movie I've ever seen. It wasn't Argyle, no. You know.
No.
Good shout out.
But it was, you know, it's been kind of like it was mid-movie March for me, and mid-movie April is starting strong. So, you know, the movies right now are kind of hitting mid-notes for me right now. So, no, it was decent. So, That's great. Let's look at the chat here real quick. So, well, Nom Talk has redeemed Hydrate for us, and Tony, with you being under the weather, and the rest of us, like, you know, plugging down food like there's no tomorrow. Let's have a little bit of water here, folks. Eric says, "Not Madam Webb. No, nothing will ever, ever reach those depths without a shovel." Let's see, Q-Ball's here. Q-Ball, it's great to see you. Eric said we did a great job with the first person. Yes, we are the masters of that. Timspiration, how are you doing tonight? He said to just imagine that we're Morgan Freeman narrating our lives. Yes. And it was Eric's idea for us to hydrate, so that's awesome. So thank you guys so much for being here in the chat. We love it. We love to see it. So this film played heavily on the nostalgia, as did Afterlife. But I mean, Afterlife was like, they might as well just handed out tissues when you walked in the door for that one. Cause you know, it was going to be, you know, for me at least, I'm a crier.
Yeah.
This is a well-established fact that I am a crier. We've talked about it probably on every stream, but I didn't cry so much on this one. This one didn't get me like that. So that's how you know it was only 3.5 stars or popcorns. So, but how did you feel like going into it? Especially like coming off Afterlife, did you rewatch Afterlife before you went to see it? Or did you just kind of like, I'll just wing it. Julie, did you prepare for it, or did you just go in and watch it?
I did no preparing whatsoever. I sort of wish I had, because there was some things where I was like, wait, did that happen? Wait, where are we at in the storyline now? Like, you know, there were a few things that I kind of had forgotten from Afterlife, but you know, yeah, I just was like, let's wing it. Let's just go in and have no expectations and apparently try to re-remember everything. It was starting to come back to me by the end of the movie, but yeah.
Awesome. How about you, Tony?
So Ghostbusters 1 and 2 and Afterlife are always in rotation. They're just sort of like those movies that I put on during the day. And then also they're pretty good good night movies. I like falling asleep to movies, but they have to be movies that I've seen so much that there are no surprises. There's no like significant like anything too new to dopamine inducing, then I just stay up and watch it. So it's just those nice comforting movies that I can just, I already know, I'm already responding in my head line by line. So, and it just lulls me to sleep. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but that's just what happens in this house. I knew that since this wasn't going to be directed by Jason, I knew that there was a high probability that they were not going to be able to recapture Afterlife, you know, the success of Afterlife. So I already went in managing expectations. And again, like, I'm a Ghostbusters 2. That is it the best of the franchise? No. Is it my favorite? Absolutely. I love Ghostbusters 2. I cannot say that enough. So I already knew that, like, there's a very high probability of me enjoying this. And even Answer the Call, even though Answer the Call is like my least favorite of the entire franchise, there's a lot I like about that movie. So I knew that, like, okay, this is probably going to be a thing where there's a lot of people who are not going to like things about it, especially if it goes the way that it usually, when a franchise diverges like this, especially a legacy like this, there's a high probability, right? I mean, Jason Reitman, the reason that Afterlife was so imbued with so much nostalgia and reference, because it was his dad's, like, that's his baby. So of course there was just a huge amount of respect that and deference that he brought to that project. And so knowing that it was then going to be passed off to somebody else, I forget the guy's name. I only know his first name. It's Gil. What is the director's name of this? That guy, Gil, Mr. Gil. Mr. Gil. we knew that even though he probably, most people are Ghostbusters fans, probably not to the degree that we are, but most people, you know, like the franchise. There we go.
Joe Kennan. Yeah.
Yeah, that guy.
Yeah.
So I knew that the likelihood of somebody just tanking this was low, but getting to the heights that a Reitman would, low probability.
No.
So it was a lot of managing expectations and me just kind of like trying to not build it up too much, not be too excited. I didn't get a chance to go see it like opening weekend. I had family in town. So I actually just saw it last Sunday. So I also knew that the audience reaction was probably going to be more measured. It's going to be folks who either weren't excited enough about this project to go see it on opening weekend, or who were like me and just couldn't get there. So, yeah, it was a very satisfactory experience.
See, mid. It's right in the middle.
I don't want to say
Oh,
mid because mid is so, it just
okay, yeah.
seems so
Yes, I know, and
it's
I
fine.
downer.
I'll do it for you because mine was even less than mid.
My
So don't, I got it. I'll shorten
no.
it for you.
My 25-year-old was with me at WonderCon all weekend, and I unfortunately picked up that word from her vocabulary because she used it so much. Everything was mid, apparently. Derek, how about you? So, what was your process going into this movie? Did you set your expectations? Did you just roll with it?
Yeah, so I didn't rewatch any of them. I much like Tony, the first Ghostbusters and sometimes Ghostbusters 2, those are on rotation at all times. There's pretty much nothing about those movies that I don't know. I could probably, and we did this one time, we failed miserably, but we tried to take the we're going to do the whole script challenge unwatched and just try to go through the entire film without actually watching it line for line. We actually did get pretty close. So there was a lot of memory there. So
Nice.
I hold both
Nice.
of those films deep in my heart. I really enjoy the points that Tony made because I did go in with a lot of trepidation and I did feel the lack of Reitman right out of the gate was going to be something
Yeah.
that, you know, was really going to falter this film. And you can feel it diverging even at that announcement, even without him helming that, because you're absolutely right. Afterlife succeeds largely for two reasons. One, because Reitman is part of this bloodline that is just born out of Ghostbusters and its attachment to these people that created such the all of this incredible iconography and cultural phenomenon. But two, and this is something that's a little bit deeper that I think mainly deep fans of Ghostbusters will recognize, there was an extreme catharsis in Afterlife watching Bill Murray come back and interact with Harold Ramis' ghost. There is just, if you know how powerful that is and how meaningful that is, that to me is what broke me in Afterlife. And there's just no way to recapture that kind of release and resolve and decades of personal turmoil between best friends turned enemies from working together and creating this beautiful story. So those things, knowing none of that was going to be in here, large part of me was really just hoping for a good time. And I feel it kind of gets there in certain places, but I just the lack of experience from good old Mr. Gill, who I just don't think has that personal attachment to the stories, the lack of Reitman, and then just all of that kind of cathartic revisitation of the nostalgia and what it means behind the scenes, what it means for these guys. None of that is there. So then you just get this kind of cacophony of characters that just don't all need to be there. And I don't think people realize how much Aykroyd unhinged is a bad thing for film, and how much Ramis like reeled that man in for most of their careers together, and Frozen Empire feels very much like Aykroyd got his chance to kind of be like, no, guys, the third one, we're going to hell like I've always wanted to do. So there's definitely those things that really just held it back for me, and I was expecting less, but I wasn't expecting this much less.
About what a yeah, wait, I already asked Julie, right? Yes, we talked. Okay.
Yes, if we saw the other
So
films.
yeah, so I didn't have time to watch Afterlife. We wanted to, we just ran out of time because my partner, he's up in Northern California all week, comes home on the weekends, and we went on I don't even remember what night we saw it. We went on Friday or Saturday night of opening weekend, and he was like, he never goes to the movies alone, and he never sees a movie more than once in the theater, like ever. He saw that movie 4 times in the theater, which means he saw it 3 times alone, like the first one, Afterlife. That I was like, who are you even? Like, what? So that is just a testament to how much that movie like meant to him. And that is because with Jason making it, that movie was made with love and heart that this movie didn't have. This movie, that's what this movie was lacking, was it didn't have that feeling behind it. And there's that scene where little teenage girl Venkman, or yeah, not Venkman,
Spengler.
oh,
Phoebe.
Spengler, thank you. I'm like, girl,
Phoebe, yeah.
McKenna Grace goes to the park. Phoebe, yeah, I can't not, see, I can't even remember their names. There's so many of them. She goes to the park to play chess, and you see the hand materialize. And Andy, my partner, he's like, oh, and I'm like, no, they're not going to pull that gimmick twice. And if they do, I'm leaving the theater right now. Because if that is Harold Ramis's ghost on the other side of that table, I am leaving this theater if they pull that twice. So I was very glad they didn't visit that well again, because that was the closure, right? That was done. But it was interesting because I talked to a couple people who said the movie was too long, and I'm like, it wasn't even 2 hours long, but they meant the pacing, which 100% they were right about that. The pacing was really off, which is unfortunate. It was a wonderful cast, but it was too many people. Now I must confess, my dream is to retire like Ray and have a spooky bookstore. That would be wonderful. But I'm going to be a little less crazy than Ray, and I'm not going to buy every creepy item off of every guy who comes in with a box of stuff. But no, so
To be
it
fair,
was it was
that is actually one of my favorite scenes. Just watching Ackroyd and Kumail Nanjiani just unleash back and forth with comedic jabs. That hands down was one of my favorite scenes in the movie.
It was a great scene. And what's even better about that, though, that is perfect for D Dan Aykroyd, because his family back in the early or late 1800s, early 1900s, and his dad wrote a book about it. His family was part of the spiritualism movement in upstate New York, where the mediums would get together and do seances and stuff. Family was very big into that. So he grew up around spiritualists and seances and ghosts. And his dad wrote a book. I think it's called The History of Ghosts. I'd have to look it up, but his dad is Peter Aykroyd, I think is. And I have the book
Sounds
somewhere.
right.
It's probably in a box of books and prizes. But yeah, great book. Really fascinating. So this for him, I mean, this book is, or this movie, like this, he's in his element with all of this shit. I did love the addition of Patton Oswalt.
Oh, yes.
Patton Oswalt. His character, it now my computer's making noises. Great. So what worked as far as the additions for you, Tony, and what didn't work?
This is the cast you pull if you're making a Ghostbuster series. There is
That's a great
literally
point.
at the end scene, I was like, there's a dozen major and supporting and major supporting characters by
Yeah,
the end.
that's a great point.
There's the four OG folks, so like Winston, Aykroyd, Venkman, and Annie Potts playing Janine Melnitz. So I'm so glad that she's back, but also I just feel like it's so stuffed that even the folks I'm excited to see, like they have very little to do because there's just so many things to get to. And then you have like the core family, right? So Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon, Phoebe, and Trevor, right? The two kids. And then we brought back Podcast and Lucky from Afterlife, even though they explained it away like with summer vacations and internships. And I'm like, yeah, that's plausible, but Jesus Christ, so many people. And
That's
then Kumail
literally already
Nanjiani.
15 people, and you didn't even mention Walter Peck, who comes back for some reason.
Well, these are just the folks that are at the end, right? In that major third act scene. So then Kumail Nanjiani and James Acaster, not to mention Peck, who's back as the mayor, Patton Oswalt making a fantastic cameo. I'm really sad that he didn't have more to do, but sometimes, you know what? I'm all right with Patton Oswalt just being the nerd who just likes to make a 2 day cameo, put in 2 days of work and just walk out, you know, completely stealing the show. So that's already just like 14 major people, not to mention the guy, I cannot remember his name, but I'm so glad they brought him back. The guy from the public library, the guy who from the first movie,
The one who was like, you are not
you're not
allowed in
allowed
here.
back in this library. Yeah, I forget his name, but I was so excited to see him. He's only on screen for no more than 5 seconds, but I was so happy to see him. And there's all these tiny callbacks. And then not to mention there's Melody, who's an additional character. I forget, I'm sorry, I don't know the name of the actress, but there's so many characters running around. There's so many storylines. And I think had this been a mini series, maybe 3 to 4 3 to 4 hour long episodes that we popped on, you know, Netflix or Paramount Plus or whatever, I think this would have been exactly the cast that you get. But we decided to go ahead and jam this into, I think it's like 2 hours and some change. It's a lot. And they,
not even.
And I think, I remember, I cannot remember who pointed this out, but I was reading, or I was reading something, I think it may have been even a TikTok video. Somebody pointed out that most directors are men, but most successful editors are women. And the reason why there's a multitude of women who are successful editors is because while men are there, you know, for all the, you know, all the reasons why they're upheld in this industry, but in order to like successfully, you know, carry an emotional through line, a woman is usually the person who is sitting down editing these kind of movies together. And they spotlighted a couple of very well-known and successful duos who have made their careers just being coupled like that.
She's won an Oscar for editing.
Right, that's right. Yes, exactly. Or like Star Wars. I forget what her name is.
Oh, yeah.
It was a female editor.
It was Lucas's wife Furnet? At the time.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I just looked this up because I had a suspicion as we were talking. I was like, this movie feels like it was edited by men. And sure enough, it's two dudes. And in Afterlife, it was a woman and a man. So they brought back one of the Afterlife editors. And then instead of having somebody, I guess it just feels like they were really jazzed about Venkman being there on screen, which I get, but also it just, there was so much stuffed in here. And I think just there's so many interesting possibilities. You know, we don't even really get to, you know, dive deep into Kumail Nanjiani's character. He's kind of there as a plot device, but even then by the end, it's kind of unnecessary. And the same thing with some of the other secondary supporting storylines, like, you know, the love story between Phoebe and Melody. It just kind of feels really underserviced. And I can say that about most of the things in here. It's really underserviced. There's a lot of really great ideas and they don't go anywhere, or they start like Frankensteining some ideas together. Like the villain is probably my biggest complaint. It's like this kitchen sink villain where he's got the whole ice thing. He's going to scare you by, you know, freezing you to death. And that's just the fear. Oh God, what is happening in my video? What is happening? Ah, it's happening. But
the ice god you can't name is coming for you.
Right. Oh my God. But then also he can control other ghosts. And that just felt like two completely different villain concepts just kind of like thrown together. And then there was nothing really said about his origin outside of the fact that he was sort of like this Rasputin witch doctor kind of character that served an ancient king at one point, and now he's back for revenge. And I'm like, well, wouldn't that be the king, the king's descendants? Why are we coming to New York? There was no connection made there. And I just really didn't understand how we were going to pull all these items together. And obviously they didn't by the end, because it's just a lot of hanging threads, I feel, that, you know.
I want to just jump in, because I think Tony has just absolutely nailed it. There are so many great things that you talked about in this, you know, as you were explaining this. One thing I do want to hammer in, just speaking as the only man on this podcast, she is 100% right. Like, let women cook, let them edit. I'm totally down for it. And it's truthfully, though, that is an incredible observation. And that juxtaposition between the emotional through lines, some of that is obviously Reitman and his vision connected to what he wants to do. And he was a writer and all of those things. But a lot of that is what goes on in the editing. And this film 100% suffers from poor editing. You can feel that emotional dissonance. You can feel that disconnection. So when I talk about the nostalgia holding it back, it's holding it back because there's nothing really all that nostalgic about it. It's literally just there to show up in this movie for no other reason than to have the library guy show up for 5 seconds. Great, but it doesn't serve any kind of purpose. Whereas Afterlife, be it the editing and the directing and just the story, all of those things felt so purposeful. There was a reason the nostalgia existed. And here it's just this splatter of all the things we're supposed to remember. Even somebody like Walter Peck, who I absolutely love as a character, I think he's absolutely hilarious. As soon as he showed up, I was just like, you don't have to be here, man. You can leave. I love him, but there was just no reason for him to exist in this movie, particularly as you've listed, it's already overstuffed with so many people, most of which we barely remember from the first movie. And now you're going to add in all of these other people that we're all supposed to remember and grasp and have some so so much of what you said was just spot on. And that's why my rating is so low. And then those are things when I talk about nostalgia, the stuff that you were talking about is very much where I say the nostalgia held it back. It's because of that. It's that editing that just feels like, oh, wouldn't it be cool if we just did Venkman again?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, well, kind of, but is it?
I think back to the mayor scenes from 1 and 2, and I forget the actor's name, but Lenny, Mayor Lenny, whoever that. Yeah. Love that dude.
He's the proverbial that guy.
Right. The doctor from Ace Ventura. Yes, 100%. He was so commanding. Those scenes are so intentional. I don't need to know that the mayor exists prior to him showing up, because obviously in the back of my mind, I'm like, of course New York has a mayor. Of course there's an authority figure that somebody somewhere is going to have to answer to. And the fact that they pull out Peck so early in the movie, and that there really is just kind of like this feeling of like, well, it doesn't really matter what this guy has to say because it's Peck, and the nostalgia factor of that. And also too, it's the mayor, so we're all in trouble. But like, if they had given him the lines that they gave to Mayor Lenny, like, I was really one of the things that it really didn't work for me in this movie is that there wasn't like the scare montage when, you know, the containment unit is blasted open. And that was some of the best stuff out of the original Ghostbusters movies. And so I thought immediately back to the second movie where Lenny says, Jack, I spent an hour last night in my bedroom talking to Fiorella LaGuardia, and he's been dead for 40 years. Wouldn't it have been great if we had a scene of Walter Peck waking up in the mayor's mansion and there is Fiorella LaGuardia and Mayor Lenny just kind of like staring at him like, what are you going to do now, asshole? Like, yeah. I thought that would have been such a great way to like make the nostalgia work for them, because it would have also been like connecting it like this is a real emergency.
Yeah.
But all we ever see is that, you know, spoiler alert, the containment unit is blasted open. We see some generic ghosts kind of fly out away from the firehouse, but we don't get that montage. And the reason why those montages were so important is because it's supposed to show the stakes that are there, that there are literally millions of people on the island of Manhattan that are being terrorized by, you know, these horrific and, you know, I would say evil-ish ghosts. Not all ghosts are evil. Let's just, you know, start there. But these ghosts that are really inclined to, like, you know, terrorize people. And I thought that would have been such a great way to, like, keep it going, make sure that there were some kind of stakes. And it just didn't do that. It just kind of seemed really content to just be like, remember these guys? Remember when we used to love when they showed up in the jumpsuits? Like, yeah, I do. But also, you got a movie to make, you know?
I could watch that other one at home. I really can.
Right.
Yeah, I agree with Tony and Derek. I do think it's overstuffed. I think, because what it is, it's just like, it has all of the parts that are great for nostalgia. Like, all the pieces are there, but I don't think they knew how to, like, put them together. They were just kind of, like, throwing it in your face. Like, here, nostalgia, cameos. And, like, it, you know, it was just... I don't think they knew how to put those pieces together in a way that worked as well as it did in, like, the other one. Or, I mean, I loved a lot of the cameos. I mean, I love Annie Potts. Like, I'm happy they brought her back and gave her a little bit more of a part. But even that, like Tony was saying, like, they don't think they gave her a lot to do. And, like, it just felt, like, contrived a little bit, if that makes sense. What I was going to say was that I've seen movies that have a lot of great actors or a lot of great cameos that it works, but it is kind of rare to make that work when it's just so many. So I feel like you really have to have the right person at the helm, and I don't know that this movie did in that case, but yeah.
I feel like it's almost sort of like this, like, Bugs Bunny spotlight that happens sometimes with cameos. And I'm like, you still have to make it. How great would it have been if Dan Aykroyd just would have been walking through and this guy, you know, the guy from the library, it's so clear that they were like, it's just one day of work, man. You just need to show up for a few hours, run down the stairs, say the sign, you know, say the line hysterically, and then go about your business. Mm-hmm. How great would it have been if they'd have been like, yeah, this might take a little while, and all you're going to do is just really walk and be like, oh no, you know, Dr. Stans, you're not supposed to be here, blah, blah, blah. But it would have been shot like a movie as opposed to a cameo. And I think that's why the cameos really just kind of stick out for me. Like, they really are shot like a cartoon rather than a movie.
I agree with that. And I think those things really, Yeah, they just don't all come together in any way. And I think we've kind of talked about it too, but it does have a lot of good ideas. That I walked away from it thinking like there are a number of great ideas here that are just not connected in the way that they should be. They're not edited down in the way that they should be. Mm-hmm. You have way too many stories going on for this to all come together. And even if you have that talent to throw out all of these different subplots and all of this different nostalgia, then you got to land the plane. You got to bring them all together in a way that makes sense. And I didn't feel that they did that at all. I was really disappointed by its final ending. And most of those subplots don't even have real payoffs. Very few of them have, and they all have these strange kind of shifting motivations because the plot asks them to. And there's just way too much. And I think that if we would have really tightened things down and really just focused on our new characters from the last one, from Afterlife, and we don't actually have to bring all these people back. We don't have to do this all at one time. We need to remember the people we liked from Afterlife first. So give us a reason to do that. And then you can start to unfold some of these other plots. You can start to
weave in
the old people that we liked. But they don't do that. And you know, to Tony's point, we just get Peck in like the first 5 minutes of the movie. Just out of nowhere, he's just the mayor. And we're all just like, but we were just with Rudd. I was catching up with the new family. Why is he?
Well, I do want to talk about the things that I think did work for me in this movie. And I think it's the double-edged sword, because I think one of the things that the reason why the third act suffers so much, it really does feel like they blew the budget on the production, like the actual production design and the sets. So it's clear that they really invested on that firehouse and then that new lab that they had in the aquarium, wherever that is, somewhere on the island. Because it just kept bouncing back and forth between those two locations. But what is in those sets is really awesome. Like, Ecto looks amazing. The new fancy drone trap, awesome. Yeah. Loved that. I thought that was really cool. I was always really worried about like a new millennium fully funded Ghostbusters. Like, I don't need my Ghostbusters to look like they work at the Apple store. And I'm so glad that they didn't go there. It still looks like they're just like finding shit from thrift stores and junk stores. And they're just like piecing things together and making it work. I really still like, to me, the 80s and the 90s were really great with these like garage science kind of like adventures, like Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, Weird Science. And it was all like this, as fantastical as those plots were, we all bought it because we were like, oh yeah, obviously, if I have a guy that's smart enough, he can make Radio Shack work for him. And I really liked that they retained that spirit of Ghostbusters technology, even with something as fancy schmancy as a flying drone trap. So I really liked that. I did like that there was a reason to upgrade the packs, because I was also really concerned about that. Like, if we're just
one pack,
or at least one, right? We get the new vehicles.
15 people with proton packs and only
exactly.
one
has brass. What was that? It's fine. Sure. Sure.
You have no brass, guys.
And I really liked James Acaster. He's got a nifty new little, like, it's a full-on black one, not the weird navy blue kind of gray one from two. Like, it is, like, it's all new stuff. It's all expanding the mythology, even in these really subtle, unspoken, and just sort of like it's unverbalized, and I really like that. What else did I like? As much as I feel like there wasn't enough time to elaborate on anything, I liked that the OG Ghostbusters, like Ray and like Winston, didn't just show up for a cameo. I like that they did try to do something with them, especially with Ray. I don't like the characterization. It really did feel like they were, Derek, I think, mentioned it, like this is like Crystal Head vodka Dan Aykroyd on full display, as opposed to Ray's dance. And they kind of make him like the village weirdo a little bit. Like, he's like the weirdo and the weird, you know, a cult shop, as opposed to he's incredibly smart. Like, in one and two, he, you know, literally the hierarchy of smarts and education goes Egon, Ray, Venkman, and then Winston, because Winston's our everyman. And it just felt like they just wanted to go ahead and just flip that, so that way Ray no longer has outside of his knowledge of the occult, that he doesn't have any of the scientific smarts to actually hang with like Phoebe or James Acaster, even though James Acaster, I'm not still really clear on like who he was and what he was doing outside of like pushing buttons and toggles. But
yeah, I love James Acaster.
All right.
So he will always be near and dear to my heart. So anytime you throw him in anything, I'm pretty much like, yeah, okay, cool. Love it. But agree. Overall, in the totality of film, this one in particular, there's no reason for him to be there. So just kind of jumping off of I like Camille Nanjiani. I like Patton Oswalt. Mm-hmm. I like James Acaster. I like all these people. And their scenes when separated is like, kind of like you mentioned with Looney Tunes skits, like Looney Tunes cameos, like they're separated into kind of that Netflix series on their own. Those feel really fun and they're really organic. And I definitely laughed at a lot of their interactions. I did like Winston having a reason. And I think his conversation with Ray, when they're really just kind of trying to encapsulate their lives and what they're supposed to be doing in this older age and that kind of thing. I thought that was really effective. That was kind of one of the most affecting, emotionally charged aspects of the old Ghostbusters. Obviously, getting to see Annie Potts with the proton pack, thumbs up, love it.
All yes,
it.
Yes.
Love that.
She put on the suit, she got the proton pack, and that made me really happy.
That was great. And then, you know, there's a lack of depth here, but I do enjoy everything with Paul Rudd, Carrie Coon, and McKenna Grace. Those three have this just brilliant family dynamic that I think they were trying to get out, but it just doesn't come through because they have so many other things they're trying to get. I think Finn Wolfhard is kind of pushed aside, unfortunately. But there are some really good performances. I know the scene between Paul Rudd and Carrie Coon where he's just reciting the song, which it's in the trailer, and then in context, it still made me laugh. That's that little piece of nostalgia done right by somebody who's just really happy to be there. So there were little bits and pieces, and I think, like I've said, in just kind of conclusion, like there are a lot of great ideas here that are just executed really poorly.
But no, thank you guys. That was actually excellent conversation and you didn't even need me. It was perfect. No, I think when Finn Wolfhard's biggest scene is against Slimer in the attic and a pile of candy wrappers, you know, poor guy. It was so many things that they just stuff and stuff and stuffed in there. How old was Melody? I mean, I know she was supposed to be 16, 15, but I just, every time they've showed her,
like, what I would imagine.
You're like 30? She looked 30. It really bothered me. I'm like, Phoebe, step back. Step back. She's too old for you. But that was all very confusing and predatory to me. I didn't like any of that, what they did there, with not with Phoebe's side of it, but with Melody. I don't like any of that, like luring her in the way she did. It felt icky and unnecessary. Like they could have done 18 other things to get the same result, taking this poor little nerdy girl and exploiting her feelings. I don't know, it felt weird to me. I think it's just because, like, I'm like, I was a little nerd girl, you know, we'll take advantage of you, not like that necessarily, but just, you don't play with someone's feelings. And I think that
she's lonely and she's not able to relate to humans. And she's just obsessed with the one thing she's not allowed to do right now. So naturally she's in a vulnerable state. And then she meets a ghost. It doesn't even have to be this love story, but if you really wanted to go down that path, then that needs to be the central thing that is the catalyst for all of the events. Rather than a subplot that doesn't really have a good payoff. And then you can start to read into the text and you start to read it as, well, this is predatory. Like, this is just, I don't feel the connection between them. So when she does turn and she basically manipulates her into releasing God or whatever, you're kind of like, well, this was dumb. It doesn't have that same emotional weight because we don't explore it enough.
The whole quasi love story between Phoebe and Melody, I I felt like the questions that were raised by that were less about their relationship and more about the ethics of ghost busting. And they never touched that because, so I think back to that Ghostbusters 2 montage where the ghost is running through Central Park. He's just on a run, just jogging, not bothering anybody. It's just the other, like, civilians that are like, ah, freaking out, and they trap that ghost. And I've always wondered about that. I'm like, not everybody is a terrible, like, Vigo, like, evil bent on the
No.
world domination. And I thought that's where they were going to go, because Melody kind of like has these dropped lines about, do you know what happens? Or, like, you want me as a ghost to come into your ghost extermination house. And I thought they were going to have some conversations about, like, do you ever think about that you could be stuffing people like me in there with these? Because all the other ghosts they show are these very, like, creature like, even that little. I've been calling it a slime porg, but whatever that little guy is that likes to just
Oh,
vomit slime on you.
Pukey? His name is
Sure.
Pukey, I think. I saw a doll. I think
That
his name
little
is
guy.
Pukey.
So obviously there's a
Inappropriate.
spectrum of like ghosts. And I thought that's where they were going to go. And they never did. And it just got into this weird, like,
See,
it
that would have
was.
been interesting to me. That storyline. I would like to see, like you said, the ethics of it. I definitely would have wanted to watch that.
I thought that's where it was going to go.
You're nicer than I am because I thought the last match, I thought we were going to learn that she like burned her whole family up intentionally.
It was the 70s. It was New York. I mean, people were doing silly things like that all the time. But I think, to your point, it's the fact that this relationship doesn't really have anywhere to go outside of just obviously it's like Phoebe and it's this, smart people can be dumb too. And I think, especially when it comes to
Oh,
like,
yeah.
we're led to believe that this is like her first, not just quasi relationship, but her first attraction to anybody, because she's largely sexless in Afterlife. And that should be the way, because she's like, what, 11 in that, So that's fine. But then just like her discomfort with like podcasts being so affectionate to her, like all of a sudden these things started to make sense. And then it just kind of all of a sudden became predatory, either, in a weird romantic way, but also like, well, I'm actually just using you to get what I want, which is the bidding of this weird ghost villain. But yeah, it just a lot of great ideas that just didn't go anywhere. And that's really upsetting.
They did kind of touch on something where I thought they might head towards the ethics discussion, and I can't remember who said it, and it might have been Pat Oswalt talking about how some ghosts are just recordings of energy that just stay. So, and we used to use this example when some of you may know, I used to actually run a ghost hunting team, and when we would go into
I didn't
people's
know that.
homes and discuss the difference. There are go we used to explain it this way. There are ghosts, which are like recordings of energy that replay. So you may see something happen over and over in the same spot and see the same thing repeat itself. That we would call a ghost for their purposes, like as an explanation. And then there are spirits, which would be more interactive and more varied in what they do, because that would be the energy that's still here. So that's how we would explain it to people if we were investigating in their home or business, just as some knowledge is how we would explain it to people
Jen,
is a
I'm very confused as to why
bare
you
bones.
didn't as to why you didn't lead with the fact
I
that
was gonna say, why are we learning this
you are a
now?
Ghostbuster.
I
Like,
didn't know that. That was
you are
awesome.
an actual ghost. Yes, we've been here for
He
you're
never
basically
busted.
you are having the pacing of Ghostbusters Frozen
You're
Empire.
burying the lead.
So I never experienced anything like what happened in these movies. It's trust me, my ghost hunting adventures are a whole very different type of podcast. A very, I could send you guys. We'll talk after the podcast. Let me get your emails and I'll send you some recordings from the Queen Mary. But it's a whole different world than what you see on Ghostbusters. It's nothing like that. There's no traps. There's no slime. It's not even like Ghost Adventures. Isn't there's no Zach Bagans is well anyway that's another show guys that's a different show for a different time so look it's 8:59 we're starting to run out of time gosh but yeah I do I have a lot of experience with actual paranormal investigations which is why I identify with Ray and in a way with Dan Aykroyd and his family over that whole spiritualism and their involvement in the paranormal because they actually know what it looks like, I guess, is the best way to put it, even though a lot of spiritualism was also faked seances and things like that. So, you know, I think we kind of have a consensus, even though some of us are 3.5 is a little more generous than Derek's 2. But I think if we kind of all average it out, we probably would all give this movie a solid 3 in the middle if we all kind of met in the middle, if you averaged out all our popcorns. You know, it wasn't the worst thing I've seen all year, but it wasn't the best thing I've seen all year. And as Heartless keeps saying in the chat, it's still no Madam Web. nothing will ever sink to that level. So, you know, that's about all the time we have tonight to talk about Ghostbusters Frozen Empire. My Frozen Coke stayed partially frozen, though, which is exciting.
Hey.
And I'm sure there's some things we missed. There were effects in the movie. They were that captivating that we didn't even talk about them because they were there. There were effects and they were there. So, you know, I want to thank Julie and Derek and Tony for being here with me tonight. Let's tell the people where we can find you. Julie, let's start with you.
By the way, I just want to clarify that I still had a really fun time at the movie, but you know, we all could admit that there's problems with it. So like you were saying, like, you know, it was fun, but it was definitely like, anyway, just to close out. Yes. You can find me on at J Raylan on Instagram, JRAELYN. I am on TikTok at J Ray Lady, at JRAELADY. And then I'm also on Threads, I guess, kind of, rarely, but also my same Instagram handle at J Raylan.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Derek, how about for you?
Yeah, you can find me on pretty much all three Twitter, Threads, Instagram, at DRock Comedy. It's DROK Comedy. I am still on Facebook, so you can just look me up by name. I'm public, so Derek Murray. And then you can always check out all of my reviews on nerdbot.com.
Great. Thank you so much. Tony.
I do want to just leave with one thing. The original concept for the first Ghostbusters movie was that Ghostbusters were meant to be sort of like a public service, like a fire department thing that would be found all over not only the country, but the world. And there's a line that Winston says at the end of it where he's like, our country, our world, something. But he alludes to the fact that like ghosts are back, essentially. So fingers crossed that that might be actually where we're going to, the original concept of the Ghostbusters, and that we get international ghosts. Could be fun.
Ooh, I like that.
You guys can find me anywhere at the Tony Sanchez, Tony with an I, Sanchez with a Z.
Can we talk about how good he looked in this and how that
Holy
man is
shit,
almost 80?
That dude is 80. He's 78 years old.
Yeah.
How?
He and Paul Rudd have discovered some secret. Just also used to rent movies at the Blockbuster I worked at.
I've said they're vampires for a long time. That's the only explanation.
I think it's the potion from Death Becomes Her. That's what I think.
Ooh, or that. Yeah, for sure.
Yes, definitely. And I am your host, Jennifer. You can find me on Instagram, do_as_Peggy says. There are some of our adventures from WonderCon on there this past weekend. I am also, you can find my cosplay adventures with the West Coast Avengers, Adventures in Avengers is a lot to say, at California Avengers, all smushed together, one word. And I try to write my movie reviews on Letterboxd, and that's just Peggy Says. And tune in, join us again on Friday. I will be hosting Ella Enchanted, which I'm super excited about because that movie is near and dear to my heart. Love that movie so much. You guys have been wonderful. I'm sorry I didn't get to more of the chat, but evil Elon and his Starlink just deemed it so. So you guys have had a wonderful time tonight. Thank you so much. We'll see you soon and have a nomorific night.